Hello, and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's August the 4th, 2023. This is episode number -4. More on that in a moment. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about Tesla being accused of suppressing driving range complaints, 7 automakers coming together to create a brand new charging network, and the Tesla takeover, and of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni, host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. Joining us today is the extraordinary Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of AutoSpec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. So, hey there, everybody. Good to see you all.
Hello, good morning. It is the first Batteries Included show, but you said -4. So negative, what's that four all about?
All right. So this is a new podcast. I think some of our viewers out there will remember us. We were had a podcast previously on Inside EVs, and they were great. They really helped us get our start, and we've been there for like a number of years now. But we really need to kind of move in a new direction, and we want to take it independent. So here we are. If people will know that I worked with them before, and so I've cut my ties with them. And this is like a brand new venture for us, out on our own, brave new world. So some changes will be happening sometime. We'll have a midweek show with some interviews and things on a more regular basis. And yeah. Tom.
So what Kyle was talking about, why is this a -4? Because we're really planning on doing the full launch of our new show with all 4 of our podcast buddies here in the first week in September. And right now it's the first week in August. So the next 4 shows that we're going to do, some of us, I'm going to be going on vacation. Martin can't be here right now. So we're really going to do the full on first show on September. So these are just tune ups the first 4 weeks, but we didn't want to leave you guys hanging without any of your weekly EV news and to see our ugly mugs for an hour or so. So that's why we're doing, these are just tune up shows, but we're so happy to be able to bring this new podcast, Batteries Included, in. Many of our followers following us on the Inside EVs podcast for years, this is going to be that and better. So stay tuned. We're really excited to bring a new show to you guys.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dominic. Sorry.
I was just going to throw out really, really quick that you can keep up with us on all the regular socials, Battery Included podcast, Twitter, Facebook, Threads, everywhere.
Yeah, it's now X.
Oh, right.
You can't say Twitter anymore. No, it'll always be Twitter.
Zitter. Yeah.
I think we're calling tweets yeets. So we're trying to come up with all the correct terminology here. But I'm all for it. But so excited. We finally got the show in our own hands. And of course, the 4 of us back together again, we're going to be able to do so much more with this new arrangement. It's going to be amazing. And yeah, like Tom was saying, midweek shows. So, you know, this was a great, you know, very low key way to start the show. First 4 episodes, just us hanging out. The launch, like Tom and Dominic mentioned, it will be in the first week of September 2023, if you're watching this deep into the future. And it's freaking amazing that we are continuing everything we've built up for the last few years under our own control. And now we can do like cool stuff. So if you want certain guests on the show, comment below with who you think we should bring on, because you're gonna see some like a little bit of changes from us over the next few weeks, perhaps different lengths of show, different styles of show. But our Friday morning podcast will always be the same. That is the staple. We all wake up early Friday morning and do the show. But we're going to also do some midweek things where we'd love to hear who should be on the podcast with us. We want to talk to experts. We want to talk to EV owners. We want to talk to battery folks, especially the name of the show, Batteries Included. I want to learn about batteries. So put down below who we should have on, who's an expert, who can help our audience learn. Should be pretty epic.
Oh, and I just want to mention too that so this particular episode is not live, but we will be returning to that format next week, I believe. So this is like a soft opening.
If YouTube lets us.
Yeah, if YouTube lets us. They should. We'll try to get that all straightened out. Yeah.
Okay.
So make sure you subscribe to the Batteries Included podcast on YouTube, because the number of subs does help us get YouTube to let us go live.
Yeah, and hit that thumbs up. All right. So do we want to talk about some what we've been driving this week?
Yes. I guess we could do some news.
Yeah, or some news. I'm not sure we should go first. Actually, I wanted to send this little message out to you. I saw this on Twitter that we have this one special listener, Janice Couch. I wanted to send a shout out to. Thanks for watching us all the time. We really appreciate your viewership, and we hope you're doing well. And So we want to talk about a little news, or we want to talk about what we've been driving.
Let's talk about like experiential stuff. Yeah. Ultimately, this show isn't live. It's like the news stuff might get up late, but the stuff we have been driving, we've driven that. That'll be relevant into the future.
Okay. Well, I wanted to hear about, because I know you've finally driven the Cadillac Lyriq, Kyle, and I really want to get your impressions of that. You've driven a few things, but this is like the one thing in the top of my mind that I want to hear about. So this was not like a loan from General Motors. It was like a customer car, but low mileage, right?
Yeah. So, and Tom knows this too, because Tom recently made some videos with Lyriq, and they're just, they did the first drive, I want to say 6 or 8 months ago, a long time ago. And they still have not made their way into the media review pool. So that I don't know where they've just parked all the cars somewhere, but there's no way for us to get one. You know, we asked GM and they're like, well, you know, we'll get one to you eventually. And it just never has shown up. So it is the most requested vehicle for us to cover from our side on Out of Spec Reviews. And super lucky that we have a great relationship with a dealer group in the San Jose, California area. So it's called DGDG. It's the same dealer that gave me the Coda Electric.
Sold you.
For $1. Yep. And basically gave me a free car, which was pretty amazing. So I still have the Coda, of course. That's going to stick around. And
need an update on that, by the way.
Yeah, we can talk about the Coda for sure. But, you know, it's got 56 miles on it now. But anyway, I drove the Lyriq from them. It was basically, in order for them to retail sell Cadillac Lyriqs, they need to have one in their service loaner fleet. So if a Lyriq has an issue, they can put them in another electric Cadillac, because Cadillac doesn't want their customers going into a CT5 or an Escalade or something like this. They want them in EVs. GM kind of gets the whole EV thing from the Bolt days, where Bolt owners go in for service, you give them a Bolt loaner. And not every dealer does this, but this is one of the largest EV dealers out there. So this vehicle came in and the dealer group realized, we actually have to put this in a loaner service. So this is their service loaner. And they said, Kyle, you know, we have this. We have Hummer EV SUV. What other cars do you want? There's a bunch that, of course, they have. And so they let me take the Lyriq for the day, and probably could have had it longer. My schedule was pretty tight. So I drove it for 5 hours. And, you know, Tom's already driven it before and spoken about it previously. And so I'd love to compare and contrast some stuff, especially from the charging side, because I think we had wildly different charging experiences with this vehicle. But overall, the scope of the Lyriq is roughly 100 kilowatt hour battery pack, 340 horsepower rear wheel drive. You can get a 500 horsepower all wheel drive one. A V spicy version will come in the future. And, you know, it's sort of a nicer than Mach-E, Ioniq 5, Tesla Model Y, but not as nice as EQE, iX, or e-tron. So it's like in between the two major classes of electric SUVs, and sits in the middle with like Genesis GV70 and Lyriq really are the two that compete in this, you know, let's just say 60,000 to 80,000, you know, price range or so. And this was 63,000 as tested, which you get a lot of car for 63 grand. You get a very roomy interior, a very interesting looking exterior of the vehicle as well. It's a cool looking car. I wouldn't say it's attractive, but it is interesting. At least it's a conversation piece. You get wonderful Super Cruise. This one was the Luxury 2 trim, I believe. So it had It had the range wheels. It had the AKG sound system and Super Cruise. So it was optioned up pretty well. It was a rear wheel drive version, which is the least sporty, of course. So this is the like daily driver range variant. I believe same as what Tom had. The 450E is what they branded as. Also, why does Cadillac put their branding as Newton meters of torque? Like no one talks. It's like the Escalade 600. It's Newton. It's like no one thinks Newton meters of torque is the dumbest way to rate your cars. But anyway, yeah. So I drove it around. The video will go up very soon for Out of Spec. It's a long initial, just first drive video. It's going to be an hour long video type situation of just my impressions as I'm finding out about the car. And my initial impressions were quite good. I'm like, you know, there's some plasticky bits here and there and things don't feel perfect, but the leather quality is great. The seats are great. The size of the car is great. And, you know, you can forgive some of the cheaper materials when you remember that it's 63 grand as tested. It's really a good value. But then I took it to a twisty road, and I know Lyriqs are not meant to be performance cars at all. No Lyriq owner is concerned about the handling of their vehicle. But same with e-tron, same with iX, same with EQE, same with Mach-E, same with Model Y. Those vehicles are not, you know, with the exception of maybe Mach-E, GT, and Model Y performance, these are vehicles that are not meant to be Canyon carvers or have really any performance cred. But especially when you get up into the luxury ones, like they don't fall apart when you drive them on a back road. They at least can get around a corner and get through it pretty nicely and are competent at the limit, and they have good damping and good control. This vehicle had none of that. It had zero steering feel. It had so much slop, so much deflection in the entire suspension system. The whole car was just leaned over on the side and porpoising. And, you know, I had ESP off and it was still grabbing brakes. I was just like, I've never driven anything so unsorted in a spicy environment. And again, no Lyriq owner will care until they have to make an emergency maneuver or until they have to do something where they have to make a quick turn really quickly. It does not instill confidence when you drive it hard. And so that I thought was a really big miss because, yeah, it needs to be very quiet and comfortable daily driver. But this really was all of that except very poor in the performance category. And then I was kind of like, oh, it's really not going to be good, because I remember talking to Tom about how he charged the Lyriq and it was all over the place. But I plugged it into a DC charger and went from 33% to 80% in 20 something minutes. And it was very consistent, no shooting up or down anywhere. It just kind of got up to 190 kilowatts or so at 33%, which, you know, it's got a pull pack voltage up, but it shot up and then it just nicely came down. So my overall impression was fairly okay on the car. I'm just pulling up my charging screen here so we can get the data to show you guys. So 26 minutes, 56 kilowatt hours.
26 minutes.
And the interesting thing is Kyle charged it on a Signet Electrify America 350 station just as I did. It wasn't the same station, but it wasn't like he did another network or something like that. So now I'm going to grab that car again next week, and I can rent it for the day. And I'm going to try to charge it on a few different stations to see if I can repeat it. And I'm going to, even if it's possible, Kyle, if you could, did you record the whole thing or no?
Just bits and pieces, but I can send you the bullet points where at least I did.
Yeah. Cause I'd love to be able to map out what you did against what I did to see. So you did 30 to 80, you said?
Yeah. So right? What I really wanted to do was to kind of match your 20 to 80 test.
Yeah.
But I just ran out of time and I couldn't drain the car more. And I had
and to it go so back. Far. It takes a long time to drain the battery.
So I just took it in the canyons and ripped it. I got like 1.3 or 1.4 miles per kilowatt hour. And I wasn't even driving that hard. So I thought maybe very inefficient. What did it do at 70 miles an hour?
I did 330 miles.
Wow. Amazing.
It was around 3 miles per kilowatt hour. Yeah. But it was perfect range condition, Kyle. It was like 70 degrees with no wind. And it just kept going and going and going. So
yeah, I wish I had remembered those statistics because
you see, if I didn't have that huge dip at 55% state of charge, it sounds like what you experienced was, if you look at the orange, my 20 to 80, it was the same as that, except without that big dip. Right. Yep. And it kind of continued down. That's what you're saying. Yep. So, you know, I don't know. It wasn't too hot when I did it. I actually opened up the hood and opened up all the plastic bits to let more air in so the fans could cool it as best as possible. I was trying to do I could to make sure there wasn't any type of thermal throttling or whatever, but that's what I did. So I'll grab it again, and I want to try to replicate what you got.
Well, the reason I didn't record my charging session was I thought I was, you know, for the review, I was ripping it around and I was trying to drain the battery, and the charging portion wasn't really a part of the review. It's like, let's just test this at the end. Mm-hmm. But I was ripping on the car. Like, I was wide open throttle, big brakes, ripping it in the canyons, like way harder than any Lyric owner would ever drive it, just to try to drain the battery for this test.
So and it should have been hot.
That's what I was thinking. I thought it would have been too hot to do a DC fast charging recording. And I had set, you know, preconditioning manually for the entire drive to just try and have it drain energy. So that ran for like 3 hours. Every hour I had to keep kicking it back on. So perhaps it just needed that much preconditioning time. I don't know. Overall, I can't gauge efficiency from my drive, but what I can say was the charging was, you know, I was just waiting for the dips and the dips never came, and it sat great, and it did 100 kilowatts all the way to 80%. Then at 80%, it fell off. I think it dropped from 101 kilowatts at 103 at 77, if you see here. And then at 80, it dropped to 88.
Yeah. Well, that's, you can't complain about that. It took me 40 minutes to go 20 to 80. And to me, that's unacceptable for a premium luxury vehicle. You know, that had to get chopped down under 30 minutes is what I said, but you went 30 to 80 in 22. So, you know, I'm 26.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm
30 minutes, 20 to 80 roughly.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. You'd be close to that 30 minutes, which is what I said it needed to do.
It's not class leading. It's not impressive in any way, but at least from my test, it was acceptable. Looking at your results, it was unacceptable. I was like, wow. And so in the beginning of this video, I put in the route planner, like, you know, the car has a built-in Google thing. And normally GM gets this pretty right. When I just did Silverado, they had me pulling in at, you know, 10 to 13% state of charge at every station and charging for 15 or 20 minutes, something like that. The Lyric was trying to get me there at 70% at an Electrify America station. And then it's like charge for 2 hours. And I'm like, wow, the charging must be worse than what even Tom realized. And, you know, cause it was predicting, you know, 2 to 2.5 hour long stops inside the built-in route planner. And I'm like, wow. Okay. Well, Tom's test was totally this backs up how bad the charging is, but I went to the charger and it was fine. So I think the trip planner's messed up. Either way, I think Tom, you and I spoke on the phone. GM needs to build confidence with their driver base in making a vehicle that can charge consistently. And so that is something that Audi has figured out, which is a direct competitor to this vehicle. Used e-tron versus new Lyric. Yeah, e-tron has less range, but every time we plug in our e-tron, it is just boom, flat, 150, no fuss.
BMWs that I've charged have seemed to be pretty reliable also, you know, and you know, I've talked about my experience with my Lightning. Rock solid charging. I know exactly what to expect every time I plug in, and that's what you need. I would take that over, possibly charging a little bit quicker. Just, you know what it's going to be from what state of charge, and every time it just repeats. It never derates. It's just boom, a straight line pretty much. So that's what I think people need to have, to know how long it's going to take. You can't take 22 minutes one day to get to a set point, and then the next time you plug in 40 minutes. That's unacceptable. And I think GM has a lot of work to do still with their charging on all their vehicles. You know, they have the potential to do really well, but, you know, it doesn't seem like they have consistent charging schemes throughout the, you know, their product line yet with the Ultium. So I'm not saying they won't get there. I hope they do in faster than not, but I think they have work to do, GM, still.
Yeah, totally agree. But, you know, final thoughts on the car from my side are it's very quiet on the highway. It rides very nice at the compromise of performance, which most 99% of Lyric owners don't care. So, you know, that's a non-issue. Super Cruise is amazing when you're on a pre-mapped road, but still no lane centering when you're not on pre-mapped roads. The sound system's pretty good. It's got the speakers in the headrest. It's got huge bass. Like, I was pretty into the sound system. Thought that was okay. Apple Maps, when you plug it in, actually you can turn the central display into the entire Apple Maps map, which is nice because the CarPlay screen doesn't really fit on the central display. But then overall, my impression was I was just left with a little bit of a lack of quality. There were many rattles, and not just one, but throughout the entire upper section of the vehicle. When I would hit a bump, when I would, you know, sort of twist the vehicle over, it would creak and make some noises. And I was like, okay, this seems a little bit weird. And I was talking to Nebula, who is a GM expert, one of our viewers. And he's like, yeah, Lyric owners are complaining about rattles. You got to bring it into the dealer and they'll fix them. I'm like, this car is 100 miles on it. It shouldn't rattle. And the forward collision warning kept misfiring and going off for no reason. And, you know, he's like, yeah, you got to bring it back in to get the sensors aligned. And, you know, he also mentioned something I picked up in the review is, you know, the air vents sag when you hit a bump. But he mentioned some Lyric owners have issues with their air conditioning performance. I did not experience that. The AC blew cold the entire day. And again, I was ripping on it. It was running battery cooling. No issues with the air conditioning for me. So overall, my final consensus is if you want something nicer than a Model Y, a Mach-E, a Ioniq 5, a, you know, you name it in that category, ID4, Q4 e-tron, this is nicer. Mm-hmm. But if you have an extra few bucks in the bank, go up for the iX, the Q8 e-tron, the Mercedes EQE, because you are getting a much nicer vehicle for that extra 20 grand, let's just say.
Right.
But yeah, when you're in this like mid, you know, high 50s, low 60s price point, when you factor in tax credit, this is only a few grand more than Blazer EV.
Right. Blazer pricing came out this week and it's kind of pricey.
It's pricey, especially when you compare it to Lyric.
Or Model Y. Like, well,
Lyric's like a way classier vehicle than Blazer.
Right. Yeah.
So it has the impression of being more expensive than it is, but there is cost cutting and you feel that in the car that you don't feel when you drive those, you know, BMW, Audi, Mercedes products. So that's my general impression of it.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
I was going to say, after spending a good amount of time in the Lyric, I echo Kyle's sentiments there. I didn't drive it the way Kyle did. And I try to put myself in the position of like what the average driver would do with that vehicle. And as Kyle mentioned, I don't think you're getting a Lyric because you want a sports sedan. Maybe you want one on the weekend for once in a while, you know, and it probably isn't the right vehicle. You might want to then steer towards, like he said, an e-tron or something. But just cruising, I did the 70-mile-an-hour highway range test. It was super quiet. My vehicle had no rattles. It was extremely comfortable, great sound system, super quiet, very smooth, ate up all the bumps and everything. Maybe that's at the expense of being able to toss it around the turns because the suspension is very soft. But I will say he's 100% right with the interior materials. It's a little bit too plasticky. I wish it was a little bit more premium, but then now it's going to cost more. So I guess the Cadillac designers, they had to make decisions on, you know, are we going to be at 70 or are we going to be at 63? You know, and there we have to cut somewhere to make that happen. And you definitely get the impression that some of the stuff was trying to look premium, but, you know, it was like, you know, you tap on it and you're like, yeah, no, that's kind of, it doesn't have that premium feel. But if you don't get in it and you just look at it, you're like, wow, that actually looks pretty good,
right?
But yeah, then you start feeling the knobs and stuff, and it doesn't have that real, like, it doesn't feel premium. But I still like it. I think it's a good choice for the price. And I think people are going to like it. You're not going to get that performance. It doesn't have that neck snapping EV torque that you feel in like a Model Y or something like that. It's not slow by any means. It's probably quicker than a lot of its combustion.
It's sub 6 seconds.
Yeah, but we're just so used to, you know, oh, it's not under 5 seconds, it's a dog, you know, which
is so stupid. True. Four seconds, actually.
It's true, because we get so used to that. But I my experience with the Lyric was good. You know, I'm going to grab another one, as I mentioned. I want to do some more charging to try to sort out how that, if I was just an anomaly, the times that I got to charge it. Yeah, that's the final, if you're looking on YouTube, that's the final numbers that I had. 330 miles at 70 miles an hour. You can't complain about that. The thing did well. If it could charge better, it would be a real, road trip beast, but we'll see. Kyle had a better experience, but he also charged it for a shorter period of time. That could be, you know, maybe he needed to be, it needed to be plugged in longer for it to start doing playing wacky, but no, not really, because mine, I had problems before 26 minutes. So we'll see. We'll sort it out.
It requires more testing. Also, we found, I was watching All Electric Family, our friends of ours who have a Hummer EV, and they noticed when they turned air conditioning on, the charge rate dropped to like 40 kilowatts. Oh. And then they turned AC off and it went back up to over 200. It almost looked like the dip Tom had. So maybe it was like accidentally the car started preconditioning and just tanked it. You know, who knows? But that's very indicative of what All Electric Family experienced with their Hummer EV. And yeah, just on the final note of Lyric, my suggestion to them 3 years ago when they were coming up with this project, or whatever, should have been make the Blazer EV have the material feel of whatever is inside the Lyric. It could probably be even a little bit less. And then make the Lyric 10 grand more. Like, make it a bigger spread and make the Lyric nicer.
Right.
Is what I would want out of the car.
Like, how much money would
Hummer EV tip, we're charging out.
So how much money would you have to throw around to bring up the interior to what it should be? You know, like, use actual aluminum instead of, like...
It's probably a few thousand dollars worth of parts content to really do it right. It's probably $3,000 to $4,000 worth of cost. I mean, it's a lot. But I think also, like, if you're coming out of a Bolt, if you're coming out of, you know, some lesser car, it's going to feel like, oh my God, this is really nice.
Yeah, but
if you're an e-tron driver, like someone messaged me yesterday, like, I drive an e-tron, I want more range, should I get the Lyric? I drove it, I'm like, no, you should get an iX.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue against the iX, I mean, just, except for the price. So I guess that's where the Lyric could come in handy. Just, you know, just fill up that price niche. For, I don't know, but it feels so much like the Genesis kind of level of, you know, materials. I feel like it should be more than that. It's like GM's a huge automaker. Cadillacs is a prestige brand, a luxury brand. The materials should feel like that. This what I think, but we can move on. And it's actually the suspension, I was like disappointed with, because I didn't really drive it super hard, but I did do some cornering. I thought it did corner pretty flat, and it does have like 5-link suspension front and rear, so I think the basic elements are there, but it sounds like it needs to be, the suspension needs some tuning.
It's fine until you get it leaned over, and then as soon as you start pushing it, but which the car had zero grip, by the way. Like, no traction. But I thought it was a great thing that had no traction, because I genuinely don't think the suspension can handle more. I mean, I'll show you. It's all on video by
impressions. We'll see the video,
Like, went into a corner, and it just kept leaning and leaning and getting all sloppy. And it was the least it almost drove like Hummer EV. Like, it felt totally disconnected from the road. It almost drove like the tire pressures were like 18 PSI. They weren't. I made sure they were all fine and everything was normal, but it just drove so sloppy. I've never driven something that's so bad in one category, actually. And then again, it's something that a normal test driver won't experience. It's something a normal, you know, car reviewer may not experience, because I was on a very hardcore twisty road that does stress the car. And I was pushing it, you know, up to 100% and beyond of its limits with oversteer and testing ESP calibration, but the whole regen drag control system, the ESP calibration, I thought was just poorly done. And I typically don't say that of GM. I'm typically very complimentary of GM's chassis and controls tuning.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think we don't have a whole lot of time, so we should move on to the next thing. Let's see. You also drove a very interesting little car, a little retro something. Can you tell us about this Mini? I saw it on your socials this week.
Yeah, we'll keep it pretty quick because it's quite expensive.
Yeah.
This is a classic Mini that's $120,000. That's powered by a Tesla Model S motor, has a 30-ish kilowatt hour battery pack from Electric Classic Cars. It's their kit, but then the whole car is perfectly restored and sort of modified and like has a really cool interior, but period correct from Gildred Racing in the Santa Barbara area. And it was a dream come true because I'm a Mini enthusiast. I've owned 6 of them. I love Minis. And Tom's a Mini guy as well and had an electric Mini. And so this is basically a classic. Yeah. And this was a 73, I believe, classic that was fully restored and then electrified. And it just blew my mind as to how much fun I had in this car. It was amazing. And so the video goes up today, and it just, you know, 300 horsepower and something that weighs, I don't know, 1,500 to 1,800 pounds. It was amazing. Wow. Just lit up the tires. You know, anytime you floored it, it was just roasting front tires. It has a limited slip diff. It was so fast. It was so fun. And it's just like, I would use this as a daily driver just to bomb around town in, because it's perfect for that. It has a 6.6 kilowatt onboard charger. It, you know, it's air cooled, but we didn't overheat the batteries. We did get the motor pretty toasty, but that's because we were driving it way harder than anyone should have been, as usual. But it just, it took it pretty well. And I just had the best time with it.
Right. So the classic minis are like a fun car to drive, like just in the regular petrol form with the gear, with the standard manual transmission. Electrified, it sounds like it would be a blast, but yeah, $120,000 though.
You know, for the average person, this is not their kind of car. They can only build a handful every year. Right. But for the mini collector, or for the guy who wants, you know, has the McLarens, has the Lamborghinis, has the Porsche collection, $120,000 for a fully restored electric conversion classic mini isn't bad. And the big thing for this is, what's the overall value going to be? It's going to be much higher with Gildred Racing, in my impression, because they're one of the only ones selling a kit to electrify these as like a real package in America right now, rather than like going to, I use the example, like Ken's one-off battery situation that you don't know what the heck he put in that car.
Sure.
So your resale is a known quantity. It's the same kit. They're building, I think, 20 of them, a run of 20. And yeah, it was pretty cool. Pretty amazing. They didn't, there was no if, ands, or buts. I just showed up. They hand us the keys and have a good time. And so, I was like, when someone does that, you know, they have confidence in the product.
Good point. Hey, so you also drove the, you were saying you drove the Hummer SUV this week?
I did, yes. The first edition Hummer EV SUV.
So you've driven the pickup truck before, of course, right? Yeah. You're on the first drive with me, I believe.
Right. And we had it in Colorado and took it off roading and took it towing, did everything.
That's right. So how'd you feel about the SUV?
I kind of like it more.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought it was even more nimble. It felt just as fast, even though it has four less modules. So it's like maybe only 180 kilowatt hour, 190 kilowatt hour battery pack.
Right.
Only. and it won't get the 365 kilowatt peak charging. It might do 300, 310, just because,
fewer modules.
Yep, fewer modules. But it just felt great. Everything about this I love. It's so stupid. It's so hilarious. It's so wasteful. It's so antisocial. Everything, I mean, it is everything a Hummer should be, but electric. And you just drive over stuff and you don't even feel it. Like, I think I ran over a Prius by accident, didn't even realize. And, you know, just an amazing package. I only drove it for a few minutes just after the Lyric, but I did make a quick video and just launched it. Roasts all four tires off the line. It's so stupid. Everything is stupid about this, but you know,
this picture we're looking at this.
Yeah,
this
I put it in extract mode all the way up, and
it's on stilts.
It goes so high. I truly love this. Everyone's going to hate me for loving it. No one cares about this car from our audience, but you just cannot have more fun behind the wheel of a Tonka toy than this thing.
More smiles per mile.
Well, you certainly don't get miles per kilowatt hour. I think I average, it just was like pegged at one.
One mile per kilowatt hour. I think that's what the deal is. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some news, I guess. Anything else you want to talk about that you've driven this past week?
Well, I just did a 2,500 mile road trip in the Model S. True. I'm right in the middle of that. Took the Plaid up in the canyon. It's the first time I've really shredded the Model S Plaid and driven it hard.
In a canyon.
Yeah, I've had it on track, which, you know, the car is definitely very fast on track in a straight line and has needed some improvements. But I think Tesla's altered some of the suspension calibration and software updates for track mode, where Model S Plaid can hold its own on a back road. I drove three Plaids, actually, you know, all with different braking systems and compared them all. And it seems like a brake booster brace does worlds of a difference to stop the brake pedal from feeling squishy. I drove a car with ceramics with the brake booster brace. I drove one with ceramics without. It was a night and day difference. My car has a big steel brake setup, which I prefer for my style of driving. It's also much cheaper. But yeah, that I thought the track mode calibration was improved. The car's fast as hell. We had so much fun with a whole bunch of people on the canyons, not on this particular drive that we're looking at here, but we also did have fun on that drive. And yeah, Model S is just the best road tripping car ever. However, it is literally falling apart mile by mile.
Okay. I mean, yeah. And yeah.
Like every new hour, a new rattle forms somewhere. And now I have this clunk and creak from the whole front end whenever I load it into a corner. It just goes, clunk, 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 and I'm like, whoa. And then the back seat latch rattle came back, even though they already fixed that. And then I have a rattle in the trunk. Then I have a rattle in the headliner. And so then I turn up the volume and the bass hits another rattle next to the subwoofer. So I'm just going crazy. Listen, I need to put like noise canceling headphones on driving this thing.
Oh, my God. Okay. Interesting. Okay, well, I don't know what to say about all that, but let's move on because not tons of time. So big news this week, Tom. Tesla created a secret team to suppress thousands of driving range complaints. This is out of Reuters. They did a big expose thing. Tell us about this. There's a couple of issues here, I believe. There's like optimistic range calculations, about 50%, and also the suppression of thousands of range complaints.
So first I want to say that these are just allegations. It's not fact. Evidently Reuters spoke with at least one person from Tesla. I would imagine they spoke with more than one. I would expect a news outlet like Reuters to make sure that they have verified any type of claims like this with more than one person before they'd run with such an explosive story. In my opinion, I'm surprised it hasn't gotten more coverage, to be honest with you. So I made a little video on this and I broke it up into three parts, actually. The fact that Tesla vehicles can't achieve their EPA range rating, number one. Number two, the fact that according to these allegations, early on, Tesla created software for their range estimator that was inaccurate, purposely inaccurate for the first from 100% down to 50%. It was intentionally designed to show greater range than what the vehicle knew it had in it. Right. And then at 50%, from 50% down to zero, it would slowly self-correct. So by the time you got down to zero, it was where they wanted it to be displayed at zero. And then they would leave approximately a 15-mile buffer after zero. So basically what you're saying is what they were displaying, they knew was inaccurate. Okay. So that's claim number one. Claim number two is that about 2.5 years ago, I think it was sometime in 2021, they were getting so many people bringing their vehicles in for service or creating service appointments because the vehicle couldn't achieve the range it was claimed to achieve, or that, you know, they'd get in their car, their range estimator would say 310 miles, and then they'd run out after driving 210 miles, a dramatic difference, you know, which can happen, depends on how you drive, where you're driving and all that. So what happened was Tesla rewrote the software for their app. And whenever a vehicle had a service appointment with the word range in it, it flagged that service appointment, and that service appointment then got canceled. And they created a team. They called it their diversion team. They brought a group of people together, put them in an office in Nevada, and basically said, you're going to call all the customers that made these appointments based on range. You're going to tell them that you ran a remote diagnostic of their car and there's nothing wrong with their car. It must be their driving is the problem. So, but here's the kicker. They never ran remote diagnostics of the car. Now, yeah. I know in most instances, they were probably right. There was nothing wrong with the car. It was just the fact that for whatever reason, the car is not going to be able to achieve the range rating. And, you know, that's it. But I'm certain that there had to be a certain percentage of vehicles, even if it was 0.5%, that actually had a physical problem with their car. Because this happens, you know, there's cars that have battery issues or whatever. And those people, they never got their car checked. They were just told there's nothing wrong with your car. It's you. It's not the car. Learn how to drive more efficiently. And that to me is the most egregious claim. If it's true that people were making service appointments. They were getting called and said, we've canceled your appointment. We ran a remote diagnostic. There's nothing wrong with your car. Learn how to drive better. And they never, in fact, ran, at least run a remote diagnostic, you know, first before you do this. So those are the three big things. So I made a video and I talked a lot in the big 15 minutes on EPA and how the range is calculated and how, there's like, and I even said, look, I'm going to give Tesla a little bit of a pass on this because I've driven pretty much every Tesla made, including the Roadster, and I can achieve the EPA range rating on every single Tesla ever made if I want to. If I drive slowly, but that's not how I normally drive, but I'm going to give them a little pass on that. Now, recently, you know, the EPA now is making Tesla derate the range on 6 of their vehicles by 3%. Oh, really? They're making them reduce the EPA rated range on 6 of the, this is kind of new. So, so they are realizing that there's something a foul with maybe the way Tesla has been submitting their EPA range ratings. Now we know the automaker does the EPA range testing themselves. They then submit that to the EPA, and the EPA typically rubber stamps it. They review it and then they certify it. Every few vehicles, like they cherry pick certain vehicles to test themselves, but they don't test most of them. They don't have the funds to test all the cars. So the automaker tests a car. Most people don't realize that. Most people think that the EPA tests them and certifies, like the insurance industry crash tests the cars. Right. They would assume that the EPA range tests them. They don't. The automaker does. And then the automaker is allowed to choose whether they want to do the 5-cycle or the 2-cycle. Mm-hmm. Most automakers, many of them at least, run both tests. And whichever one has a better result, they use that one. Like Tesla, for instance, in 1 year, I think it was 2019, they had like 6 different versions of the Model 3, okay, that with different wheels and performance and rear-wheel drive and all this. 2 of them were certified using the 2-cycle system, but 4 of them were certified using the 5-cycle system. So that tells you that they're choosing which one to use.
Gaming the system, some might say.
And kind of game. But it is, that's the system.
That's right. Right.
Nobody says you can't do this. We need a new system is what we need. You know, there needs to be a completely new EPA test done. This is an archaic test that was never even designed for electric vehicles. So this is what I did. I went and researched every year since 2012 and listed how every vehicle was certified, depending on which test, the 2-cycle or the 5-cycle test. And you notice in the earlier years, almost all of them were 2-cycle. But now, later on, more and more vehicles are being tested with the 5-cycle test, specifically if the vehicles have heat pumps. Because if you have a heat pump, it benefits you to use the 5-cycle test, because then you only have to discount the range at the end, your findings, by 23% instead of 30%. Wow. And it also, the additional 3 cycles are mostly about heating and air conditioning and cold soaking the battery. So the more efficient heating systems, you would want to run the 5-cycle test. But nobody even used the 5-cycle test until 2014. I think BMW was the first company with the i4 to actually certify with a 5-cycle test. Before 2014, every EV was certified using the 2-cycle. So it's just convoluted. It's confusing. It allows people to game the system. It's kind of like gerrymandering with voting districts. So we need a new system to do that. Mm-hmm. So let's put that to the side. I've talked too much about that. And then the two other issues are, did Tesla develop software that intentionally lied? Like it would show you had 77% of your battery left when you really had 70%. From the 100 down to 0, and the people that Reuters talked to said that this was both of these were directives directly from Elon Musk. I think we would all believe that was the case if this is true, because I think he kind of rules with an iron fist. And
he's a micromanager.
If this was going to be done, it was going to be his directive. I don't believe anyone thinks that if this is true, that employees were doing it without Elon knowing about it. You know, that was kind of like Steve Jobs had to know every single detail of what was going on with Apple and approve everything. There's no way something like this could have happened without Elon being the one that either had the idea or rubber stamped it. So that's number one, is the range predictor is inaccurate. Number two, which I said is much more damning, if it's true that they literally set up a secret team in an office and the employees were told for every vehicle that for every appointment that they canceled, they were saving the company $1,000. And then they had a xylophone in the office. And every time someone canceled the service appointment, someone went over and went like, ding, ding, ding. So, and everybody like cheered, like they were like cheering that they were canceling people's appointments one at a time. If this is happening, it's egregious. I think Tesla should be punished severely for it. If this is what's happening. And then I go into something, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I have to mention it in my video, which I haven't seen anybody else mention. So we know we have this big war about direct sales and dealerships and purchasing vehicles through dealerships. States one at a time are fighting back. The NADA is fighting back. Dealership lobbies are fighting back. They don't want to release that you know, death grip they have on all of the vehicles have to be sold through dealers. Ford is trying to break that now. They created Model E. Florida just came out and is basically not going to let Ford do that in the state of Florida. So I think we're going to see other states do that too. It's a war. The dealer lobbies are strong. Mm-hmm. I'm very close to this because I've been working with dealers. I've been working with the dealership lobbies, for years with my training. A lot of my training was funded by them. And I had to kind of sit there and bite my lip when they would talk bad about direct sales. So, and they always use the argument that we cannot allow direct sales because the automaker is going to be a bad actor. The automaker is going to do things to harm the customer, and you won't have a middleman to fight on your behalf. The automaker is going to lie to you. The automaker, if you say there's something wrong with your car and you're dealing with somebody in Silicon Valley in a big ivory tower, you have no recourse. You can go to your dealership. You can point at your service manager. You could say, Jim, I've been buying 8 cars here. Get this goddamn thing fixed now, or I'm never coming back here and buying another car. You can't do that with an app when you make a service appointment and say, my range is bad. And then someone calls you and says, you know what? Right. which is what's happening here. So if this is proven true, in my opinion, it's going to hurt the direct sales push in this country. We're giving the dealer lobbies, the NADA, a tremendous amount of ammunition to say, look, we were right. If you let these companies sell you cars directly and you don't have a middleman, the consumer's going to be harmed. And I'm telling you, this is going to hurt direct sales. If it's proven true, this is going to hurt direct sales. And nobody's been talking about this.
Interesting. Interesting argument. I mean, people will argue back. I think that, dealerships create their other friction points, but
they do.
But you do make a good point.
I'm just saying it's giving ammunition, Dom. I'm not making the argument that we shouldn't do direct sales. I want to have direct sales. I want to have both. I want to have to choose how I want to buy a car. I'm just saying we're giving them ammunition unnecessarily. It's a self-inflicted wound if this is true.
Right.
So I have some experience. I have not followed this story at all until right now. This is the first time I'm really hearing about it.
Okay.
And I have direct experience with all of the above.
Oh.
So this is amazing. It's not amazing. It's sad. Yes, I have noticed that in every Tesla I've tested, they, I guess, derate faster in the first bit of the discharge curve than in the second bit. And I've even mentioned this in out-of-spec videos for years that we've seen this. So this is not new. Part of it's because, of course, there's a buffer at the bottom at zero. So they account for the buffer at 100%. Then I think as you get closer, they get to zero and they leave 3 kilowatt hours, roughly 15 miles below zero. That all makes sense. So that seems based in some sort of logic. Whether or not that's a bad thing or a good thing, I don't know. But ultimately, they have a non-linear discharge curve displayed to the user, at least maybe in the brand newest software update I haven't tested, but for years that's been the case. The second point Tom brought up is the range concern. Some of you may remember I did a battery health test on my Model 3 Performance maybe a year ago, and it came back at 3% health, right? Which is a big alarm. Like what is so broken? And the range had gone to crap. like the efficiency had dropped, the range of the car had dropped, the usable energy capacity of the battery pack seemed to have dropped more than normal. And then I did this battery health test and it showed 3%. So I'm like, something is up. I put in a service request in the app and I got a call. First time I've ever gotten a call from someone at Tesla. It must have been from this room. And it was them just basically saying, hey, cold weather affects it, all these things, your car's fine. And I'm like, no, I just did a battery health test. It shows 3%. I've also noticed about 11% degradation in my testing. And they're like, oh, no, wait, you're good. So exactly what Tom had described is what I went through. And I had to push this guy really hard to be like, dude, here's the video link. Like, we did some testing, whether or not it's a range concern or battery concern or something, there's something up with this test. Either your battery health test is wrong built into the car, mm-hmm. or my car has an actual issue and you're just trying to blow me off. And I'm like, well, it was right at the end of my battery warranty. So I'm like, I really wanted them to admit that mm-hmm. either their test was wrong or the car was broken before the warranty expired. Mm-hmm. So that was the biggest pain in the ass trying to get this guy to dig into my car. He just did not want to touch it at all. And it took multiple phone calls and multiple requests for service. My local service center wanted to help. They're like, 3% health test. That seems terrible. Schedule an appointment, bring it in. Right. But I couldn't just bring it to them because I have to schedule it with their headquarters team. Mm-hmm. And really? So I'm talking to my local service center and they're like, we want to scan your car. Just schedule it and bring it in. I'm like, I cannot schedule this to you. It is impossible for me to schedule for you to look at it. And finally, I forget how many weeks it was after me just like really hammering these folks. Someone logged into the car and someone got back to me and said that their battery health test had a bug that showed 3% health. And okay. So I was like, oh, okay, well, there's your answer. Great. Why couldn't you just tell me that, you know, weeks ago after all these questions? So
those people had no knowledge. They were just hired to be a buffer to get you to give up. And because you're Kyle, you wouldn't. But think about the average person who just bought his first EV.
Right.
No, so, and I agree that 99% of their range concerns would be folks not understanding that the car is rated range, not guessometer, and that, you know, yes, you're not going to achieve the right range that it states. We've all driven Teslas for years. We get that. But like, I was like totally sort of tangent concern, different concern than my car doesn't go fast enough. I understand degradation. I understand these things, but I have a health test that shows 3%. And they just were the most annoying. I've had a great Tesla service experience aside from this. Truly, this was the big issue. So I don't mean to complain or add fuel to the fire in any way, but that was my experience and it was not great. And right. Totally correct on the nonlinear discharge curve. So there definitely is something, some conversation and some truth baked in here. I'm not sure all 100% of it's true and they're tapping the xylophone. I don't know. But like, you know, definitely there is some truth to Tesla you know, trying to mitigate their costs of managing their fleet of vehicles that they have to warranty, of course, and also for them to, you know, say that such a small percentage of those ever truly do have a battery issue. You know, typically the cars will show a fault separate from a range concern if there is a battery issue. But like Tom said, it's a good feeling when someone doesn't understand the product or doesn't feel like things are operating as normal. It take the time to explain this to them. Take the time to make them feel like you checked on the car. Actually check on the car in the rare case that there could be an issue. That's the best way to get customer retention is make people feel good.
That's right. 100%. If they would have just created this team instead of calling a diversion team, you know, a range academy team. And yeah, everyone that did range, it had range in their service request, get flagged them. Run the diagnostic first, then call them and say, look, here's the issue, Kyle. You know, we see you live in Colorado. You know, you're probably driving up and down mountains. There's rated range and then there's real world range. And this isn't just Tesla vehicles. This is all the vehicles. Spend 5 minutes talking to them about temperature, about all this stuff. Make the customer feel a little bit better. And then at the end, say, look, and if you really, after all this, you are still not convinced that there's a problem, make a service request. We'll check your vehicle out. But you know, that's customer service, not this. Imagine, I mean, if this is true, hiring and assembling a team just to crush service appointments, to cancel them and just kick people, your customers that spent a lot of money on your cars, that are confused. They don't understand why the car says 300 miles and then they run out at 210. You know, just take the time to explain this to them, for Christ's sake. And, you know, it's if it's true to me, I think they need to be punished badly.
I mean, just if the telling people that they did this, you know, check this remote diagnostic and then but not doing it, that's like that would be, if it happened like that, that's fraud. And I don't know if the government's getting involved based on this report, but I think they ought to, you know, at least look at it, make sure, you know, people have to be accountable. But yeah, we should move on real quick. We don't have a whole lot of time today. We can't do our huge, long, lengthy show like usual. We're going to keep it short this week. Next week, we might go a bit longer. But see, we also wanted to mention a few things that we haven't had a chance to talk about. We missed the week. We unexpectedly didn't get to do a podcast last week. But seven automakers have united to create a new high-powered charging network across North America and eventually Canada. And Tom, just really, there's not a whole lot of information about it. We don't even have a name for this new network yet, but you did a video on it. So what are the really quick top highlight points?
Okay, so we have General Motors, Honda, Hyundai, Kia, Mercedes, BMW, and Stellantis got together, and they're going to create a new network. It's not named yet. We don't know what the name of the network's going to be. They're saying they're going to install at least 30,000 DC fast chargers in both urban and highway locations. They're going to start installing the first location in the summer of 2024, next summer. And, you know, it all sounds great on the press release. Obviously, the devil's going to be in the details and how they implement this. They seem to understand that reliability is key, because they mentioned reliability a whole bunch of times. And maybe, you know, lessons learned from some of the problems we've had in some of the other networks out there will help them launch something that's even better. We hope that, and we hope that it rises the performance of all of the networks. But for now, you know, you can look at it as half full or half empty. I've had a lot of comments on my video, people saying I don't have any confidence in these seven companies that they can, you know, together put something out there that's going to be more reliable than what EA has done so far. You know, you could look at it half full and say, you know, we've got some more time now. There's newer equipment. They have the opportunity to see where there's been failures in these other equipment manufacturers and improve upon that. So they're going to have some locations that are going to have like cafes. They're going to have, I mean, there's a lot of, and the whole network is going to be powered on renewable energy. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to have solar canopies over all these stations, because that's just not how it works. But I'd imagine
some will,
but I would imagine the majority of the network will be powered by buying, like, you know, renewable energy credits or some sort of a offset like that. But that's still good that the whole network will be powered 100% by renewable energy, and all of the locations will have both the NACS connectors and CCS connectors.
Right on. And there's going to be what you said, 30,000 altogether.
Well, they said at least 30,000. Okay. You know, and you know, hopefully it would mean that's the initial phase, and if things are working well, they just continue to install them. Look, this isn't going to be the be all end all. But it's going to be another tool for us out there. It's going to be another, hopefully, like I said, this is what I really hope that they learned from some of the failures that we've seen on some of the other networks. You know, we don't know that. They could put out garbage. It could be worse than what we have right now. We'll see. We'll monitor it closely. But, you know, hopefully they get a good group of smart people together and they improve upon what we have. And maybe we get a little bit better service, better locations, better amenities at these locations. And, you know, now that adoption is really rising, I think it's the right time to really pour money into this. And I think it's a good move by these guys. But it all depends who they put in charge of this. Obviously, all seven companies aren't going to be having daily hands-on managing. They're gonna like Volkswagen made a new entity with Electrify America. I would imagine that's what's going to happen here, and all of these companies will have a say in what goes on. But the company that they start is really going to be the one running the show with this.
Right. It's 30,000 charging points. Right now, according to the U.S. Department of Energy, there are about 32,000 publicly available DC fast chargers in the United States for use by 2.3 million electric vehicles. So that's a ratio of 72 vehicles per charger. So this is going to double that, but then we're going to have more electric vehicles on the road as well. So,
and more chargers from other networks. I mean, Electrify America is not stopping. Right. EVgo is not stopping. Tesla's not stopping. I mean, by the time, if this network does fully come to fruition, by the time they get their 30,000th charger in the ground, there'll probably be 100,000 chargers from all the other networks out there combined. So, you know, we're on the right pace, but hopefully the equipment works.
The government says we need 182,000 DC fast chargers to support 30 to 42 million plug-in vehicles by 2030. Mm-hmm. So a lot of work, a lot of chargers to put in the ground, make everything click. Really quick, we need to end really soon here. We need to talk really quickly about the Tesla takeover. It was a big 3-day event. Kyle, you were there. And you have a video walking everybody through it. So if you want to get like on the ground, see how it felt, what was going on, what was there. Kyle has a great video just walking around. But just quickly outline, like, who sponsored, what is this exactly? What's the point of this thing?
Yeah, it's an event put on by a local Tesla Owners Club, Tesla Owners of Silicon Valley. They hosted it in San Luis Obispo, which is one of my favorite towns in the entire country. So I never turned down an opportunity to go to SLO. I think it's amazing. Oh, and it's just a really neat event. We met so many viewers. So they have, I don't know the exact number of attendees, but a couple thousand, maybe 1,500. This time it was a 2-day event. So it actually didn't feel as jam-packed as years past, but it was spread across 2 days. And they had a bunch of notable speakers that joined. I didn't really sit in to listen to any of that, but I did have the opportunity to say some words up there. Which I thought was kind of funny because I'm like, you get my thoughts for free on YouTube. So get me out of here, basically. I don't know. But I really had a great time meeting all the other creators. We took everyone out to dinner, had a great time. All the creators that were left after the event, it was so much fun seeing everyone hanging out. We met so many viewers there as well, so many, especially Tesla-specific audience. But it's not just Tesla. There were Lucids, there were Rivians, there were F-150 Lightnings and Mach-Es and other EVs, Porsche Taycans, et cetera, that were all there joining as well. So it was a really inclusive event. There were a few Tesla Roadsters, original ones, which was pretty cool. And so, you know, it's just sort of a gathering of EV enthusiasts in a field for 2 days. I don't really think there's any need to glorify it. That's basically what it is. Mm-hmm. And you stand outside, you get sunburnt for 2 days, you have a great time, you drink a lot of beer, and then you leave.
And there's a lot of aftermarket accessories available for sale, people pitching their wares, mostly Tesla related, but some other EV, you know.
Yep. Yeah, lots of accessory companies. Those, I got to tell you, there's a lot of crap out there. There's a lot of crap, a lot of just cheap plastic stuff that people are sticking on their cars. I can't fully understand it, but
you called out a couple in your video, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just walking up. I'm like, well, I put this on my car and it broke. So, you know, it just like, okay, quality is something that needs to come to Tesla aftermarket, but there are a few very high quality companies, Unplugged Performance, Martian Wheels, the new Aero Wheels, few other like very high end products, but you know, just lots of little stick on stuff that just doesn't really make sense for me to really talk about. So yeah, like Tom's muted.
Tom, what's going on? Chrome,
that last picture with that car with the chrome fins on the side or something.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. If you're one of our followers, God, that does not look good, guy. Please.
Okay, we're not here to judge. We're here to just, if you're into your
do whatever makes you happy. I know some people don't like that I tinted the light bar on my Lightning, but. Right. That doesn't do it for me.
At least it's not like those little stick-on little ports that you can get from like a parts store that may look like an old Buick. You know,
So many Teslas in California with these little stick-on things that just look like they're ready to fly off. It doesn't save weight. It doesn't improve aero. Like it doesn't do anything. But whatever. I don't care. If you're into your car, you're cool with me. And a car should be a canvas for personalization. I'm glad people have the opportunity to do that. And it was a really great, just all around fun time. Like I said, other vehicles other than Tesla were there. So, Yeah, all good.
Just one really quick thing that you mentioned that's in your thing too. Unplugged Performance, they've just been making things for, you know, performance add-ons for Tesla for a while and some interesting interior touches. But now they're actually going into the police vehicle market and making, like, taking cars and turning them police vehicles, it looks like, right? That's kind of a big step up.
Yeah, so South Pasadena did 20 Model Ys with Unplugged, something like this.
That's amazing.
I think that could be a huge growth point for their business and other outfitters out there, especially as, to me, especially for city use, it only makes sense to have an electric cruiser. There's reason they need combustion versions of these. Right. And so, you know, let's just like find the correct alternative. Now, I'm not convinced the Model Y is the perfect cruiser, but it might be. I just don't know. I'd like to interview some police departments and maybe bring one of these Unplugged show cars over to them and get their impression. That could make some interesting stuff.
That'd be cool.
Let me Laser EV will probably be a good cruiser.
Yeah, it's just a little bit short. And I think they're all really liking this Explorer sort of high roof situation.
Right. All right. Well, I mean, I think we have to call it a show at this point. This is a great looking car, though. Yeah.
I mean, this is their show car. The final police ones are going to be on the standard wheels, non-big brakes, stuff like
right.
that.
Right. Maybe I like those lights along the bottom of the bottom of the doors between. That's pretty cool. I've never seen that. Yeah.
It just shows what's possible, and every police department can choose the spec, but it's always good to have a maxed out show vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe Unplugged, this is owned by City of South Pasadena, which is why they're allowed to drive it around with the police. They just put out a service somewhere in the vehicle.
I see. Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. So I guess we need to say that's the end of our show. That brings us to the end of our very first show, -4. More coming up next week and in the years following. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on our YouTube page or get in touch with us on our Twitters and or Threads account. We are at Batteries Included Podcast. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up here. Subscribe if you haven't done that already. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's on Twitter. What are you on Threads, Tom?
I am on Threads, Tom. I think it's tom.malogany or just Tom Malogany, but I am on Threads.
Yeah, Tom Malogany. Kyle Connor is Kyle Connor on Twitter, and he's Virtual Kyle on Threads. And I'm Drive Electric with Dominic on Threads. Click subscribe. And Martin, he's not with us today, but if you want to get in touch with him, he's at EV News Daily, of course. Click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Thank you so much for joining us. Ciao.